Since she was in Gibraltar anyway, Salander had decided to visit Macmillan, the man who handled her finances. She had not been in touch with him since just after the New Year, and she wanted to know if he'd been busy ruining her ever since. But there had not been any great hurry, and it was not for him that she had gone straight to Gibraltar after her release. She did it because she felt a burning desire to get away from everything, and in that respect Gibraltar was an excellent choice. She had spent almost a week getting drunk, and then a few days having sex with a German businessman, who eventually introduced himself as Dieter. She doubted it was his real name, but had not bothered to check. He spent the days sitting in meetings and the evenings having dinner with her before they went back to his or her room. He was not at all bad in bed, Salander thought, although he was a bit out of practice and sometimes needlessly rough. Dieter seemed genuinely astonished that on sheer impulse she had picked up an overweight German businessman who was not even looking for it. He was indeed married, and he was not in the habit of being unfaithful or seeking female company on his business trips, but when the opportunity was presented on a platter in the form of a thin, tattooed young woman, he could not resist the temptation. Or so he said. Salander did not much care what he said. She had not been looking for anything more than recreational sex, but she was gratified that he actually made an effort to satisfy her. It was not until the fourth night, their last together, that he had a panic attack and started going on about what his wife would say. Salander thought he should keep his mouth shut and not tell his wife a thing. But she did not tell him what she thought. He was a grown man and could have said no to her invitation. It was not her problem if he was now attacked by feelings of guilt, or if he confessed anything to his wife. She had lain with her back to him and listened for 15 minutes, until finally she rolled her eyes in exasperation, turned over and straddled him. "Do you think you could take a break from the worrywart stuff and get me off again?" she said. Jeremy Macmillan was a very different story. He held zero erotic attraction for her. He was a crook. Amusingly enough, he looked a lot like Dieter. He was 48, a bit overweight, with greying, dark blonde curly hair that he combed straight back from a high forehead. He wore thin, gold-rimmed glasses. Cambridge-educated, he had once been a business lawyer and a stockbroker in London. He had had a promising future and was a partner in a law firm that was engaged by big corporations and wealthy yuppies interested in real estate and tax planning. He had spent the go-go 80s hanging out with nouveau riche celebrities. He had drunk hard and snorted coke with people that he really did not want to wake up with the next morning. He had never been charged with anything, but he did lose his wife and 2 kids, along with his job, when he mismanaged several transactions and tottered drunk into a mediation hearing. Without thinking too much about it, he sobered up and fled London with his tail between his legs. Why he picked Gibraltar he did not know, but in 1991 he went into partnership with a local attorney and opened a modest backstreet law office which officially dealt with much less glamorous matters, estate planning, wills, and the like. Unofficially, Macmillan and Marks also helped to set up P.O. Box companies and acted as gatekeepers for a number of shady figures in Europe. The firm was barely making ends meet when Salander selected Jeremy Macmillan to administer the 2.5 billion Swedish krona she had stolen from the collapsing empire of the Swedish financier Hans Erik Wennerström. Macmillan was a crook, no doubt about it, but she regarded him as her crook, and he had surprised himself by being impeccably honest in his dealings with her. She had first hired him for a simple task. For a modest fee, he had set up a string of P.O. Box companies for her to use. She put $1 million into each of them. She had contacted him by telephone, and had been nothing more than a voice from afar. He never tried to discover where the money came from. He had done what she asked and took a 5% commission. A little while later, she had transferred a large sum of money that he was to use to set up a corporation, Wasp Enterprises, which then acquired a substantial apartment in Stockholm. His dealings with Salander were becoming quite lucrative, even if still on a modest scale. 2 months later, she had paid a visit to Gibraltar. She had called him and suggested dinner in her room at the Rock Hotel, which was, if not the biggest hotel in Gibraltar, then certainly the most famous. He was not sure what he had expected, but he could not believe that his client was this doll-like girl who looked as if she were in her early teens. He thought he was the butt of some outlandish practical joke. He soon changed his mind. The strange young woman talked with him impersonally, without ever smiling or showing any warmth. Or coolness, for that matter. He had sat paralysed as, over the course of a few minutes, she obliterated the professional facade of sophisticated respectability that he was always so careful to maintain. "What is it that you want?" he had asked. "I've stolen a sum of money," she replied with great seriousness. "I need a crook who can administer it." He had stared at her, wondering whether she was deranged, but politely he played along. She might be a possible mark for a con game that could bring in a small income. Then he had sat as if struck by lightning when she explained whom she had stolen the money from, how she'd done it, and what the amount was. The Venestrom affair was the hottest topic of conversation in the world of international finance. "I see." The possibilities flew through his head. "You're a skilled business lawyer and stockbroker. If you were an idiot, you would never have gotten the jobs you did in the 80s. However, you behaved like an idiot and managed to get yourself fired." He winced. "In the future, I will be your only client." She had looked at him with the most ingenuous expression he had ever seen. "I have two conditions. The first is that you never ever commit a crime, or get mixed up in anything that could create problems for us and focus the authorities' attention on my companies and accounts. The second is that you never lie to me. Never, ever. Not a single time. And not for any reason. If you lie to me, our business relationship will terminate instantly, and if you make me angry enough, I will ruin you."